Welcome back to the Rockman Power Hour, a podcast where we talk to the most interesting people in the world of pop culture. And this week on the show, we are joined by a legendary comedian who is going to be hitting the Canadian soil very, very soon. His name is Neil Hamburger. Welcome back to the podcast. Very, very happy to be having you join us again this week. Unfortunately, I will not be joined by my co-host, Ryan Stick, this week. Ryan is predisposed. Very mysterious for saying that he's still feeling a little under the weather, but he will definitely be back on the show next week. Do not worry. Ryan is on the mend and doing a lot better than we all fathomed he would be doing at this point. But major setback today. Major setback, minor setback, but he's doing okay and he will be with us next week. I'm kind of flying solo here, so I'm going to make the best of it, but I am very, very happy to say that Ryan is doing much better and will be joining us again next week on the show. So this week on the podcast, we are joined by a legendary comedian that is coming to Montreal on April 16th. He's going to be playing a few Canadian dates, the 17th. He's playing in Ottawa on the 18th. In Toronto, and his name is Neil Hamburger. Now, if you are a fan of comedy and you like your comedy with an edge, this guy is for you. If you've never heard of Neil Hamburger before, well, I don't want to give away anything, but I will tell you, go check out some of his act if you can on YouTube. Go listen to some of his comedy albums. He's absolutely hilarious. I have no way to tell you how Neil Hamburger has made my appreciation for comedy grow. I can't begin to tell you how much I enjoy what he does. He's original, he's funny, but his comedy is different. Okay, so if you're someone that is, I don't want to say easily offended, but it might just go over your head. And that's what I love about him. If you know, you know. And it's thanks to my friend Ron Adams, who turned me on to Neil Hamburger many, many years ago. And I fell in love with his brand of humor. And I'm very excited to be able to say I'm going to finally get to see him play on one of these upcoming Canadian dates. And when we had a chance to have him on the podcast, I could not say no. So Neil is joining us. If you're watching this, I just want to let you know that Neil was not on camera. He did not want to be on camera. He's a very private man. And his privacy is important to him. And I think that him not being on camera was something we weren't used to, but we respected very much, because to get a chance to talk to someone like this for 20 minutes, you don't pass it up because he doesn't want to turn his camera on. So Neil Hamburger is joining us right now. It's fun. I think you're going to like this conversation. If you're a fan of the Red Hot Chili Peppers, I'm telling you right now, turn this off, because you will not enjoy the conversation. Here it is, without any further ado, our conversation with Neil Hamburger.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, we got it.
How are you?
Good, good. What's going on there?
Not much. I asked if I could talk to the incredible Neil Hamburger before his show here in Montreal, and someone got back to me and said you'd be willing to chat.
Well, you know, it entails me borrowing a couple of computers and a couple of sets of headphones and a notepad and a couple of pens, and then I needed to have a cup of ice water, and a table, and then we needed a room, and then I needed a wristwatch. But we got all those things. Now we're ready to speak with you.
Well, I'm really, 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 really appreciative that you took the time to chat with us today, Mr. Hamburger. I've been a fan for a long time. It's funny because, you know, you go hand in hand with the things that I love, people that aren't afraid to be themselves. And when you toured with one of my favorite bands in the world, Faith No More, it just made perfect sense.
Well, you know, I go way back with those guys, and I do think we're on the same page when it comes to a lot of issues. that plague the world today, issues of being brought down by low quality and that type of thing. I think that they also feel the sting sometimes of having garbage acts on the bill accompanying them. And so, you know, together we were able to rectify that situation. You know, you look at their history and you see these tours where Limp Bizkit and people like this are opening for them. And I think it's going to always be preferable to have a wiseacre, a wise ass comic saying horrible things about Limp Bizkit than it is to have the actual Limp Bizkit.
Now if you could just let me know, how many dates did you actually do with them? Cause I know you have a, like you mentioned, you have a long history with them, but did you do like a lengthy tours with them, or were they just kind of one-offs? How did it work?
Well, this would have been, you know, in the, when they reunited, as the Peaches and Herb song
right.
that they covered, documented. I believe we did a couple of shows in San Francisco. Then we did a couple of days there in Brooklyn, and we did one in Philadelphia. And then we did some more in Sydney and Melbourne, Australia. And that was the full extent of that.
When you play in front of a crowd like that, you know, I know you've played with musical acts before, but how does that differ, let's say, when you're on stage in front of a festival crowd versus a sweaty, smelly nightclub where most comedians are used to playing in?
Well, you know, the festival crowds, the people there are disengaged. They're frequently drunk or low age. You know, some of them are 12 years old. And it's sad, too, because their parents send them out to the big festival to see their heroes. And the kids get back in the car at the end of the night and their heads are split open and they've got dried blood caking their clothing, which has been ripped off for the most part. And they're puking up cheap vodka that was given to them by some of the creeps in some of these bands. And often you've got broken limbs. And I saw one kid had his eye knocked straight out of his skull. So the festivals are the worst possible place, you know, in addition to, well, the best situation is that they're disinterested. The worst situation, which I've encountered, is they start throwing shoes and bottles. And, you know, I did the Reading Festival. You've heard of that one, I'm sure.
Of course.
Big rock and roll asshole festival. And I believe the year that I did it, I do think Limp Bizkit was on the bill. And I do think Guns N' Roses and some of these other acts were on the bill. And I lasted about 4 or 5 minutes on the stage there before the security actually dragged me off in a way that you may have seen in a Bugs Bunny cartoon, where the heels are dug into the ground as they pull the person or the rabbit or the roadrunner off the stage as a hail of bottles and shoes and rocks and cups were coming my way. And they told me I was removed for insurance reasons because the audience didn't really like the fact that, I, you know, because they were so hostile, I stopped telling the jokes and just started giving my frank opinions of the various acts that were headlining that festival. And they didn't care for it. So I did get paid. But I would say overall, a festival type of crowd, you're better off performing for a brick wall or even a stucco wall or even a piece of wood or a piece of cardboard or even a piece of shit, honestly. You're probably going to be more satisfying than playing to those festival crowds.
I can imagine. Also, you know, your brand of comedy is, I like to think of it almost as highbrow comedy, because I think it's just a lot of people that don't get it, might go over their heads, but there's something about your act that, the minute I saw you for the first time, and I haven't seen you live yet, but the minute I saw footage of you for the first time and then listened to recorded, you know, portions of your act, I fell in love with this act, and I fell in love with just the way you delivered it, because it's truly unique. What was a Neil, you know, a young Neil Hamburger like, and what brought you to the point of being able to perform the way you do?
Wow. I mean, this is why I have a notepad, is to keep track, because questions like that are essentially essays with a question kind of tacked on at the end, sometimes you got to get it straight before you try to answer, or you'll screw it up. And I'll start answering about what I think of the new Snickers bars packaging or whatever. But the best way to, I think, do comedy is to absorb everything that's come before and life experiences and some of the weirdos, quite frankly, the characters and the bad folks that you may have encountered, and also the good folks that you may have encountered. And you chew it all up, and then you, I guess, digest it, and then you get on stage and throw it all up. And that's the act, you know. And of course, many, many years on these types of stages for these types of crowds is really what makes any act worth its weight. The more you do it, the more, of course, you figure out what it is that you're doing. And I don't think you're going to see a lot of quality comedians who are 14 years old and are going up for the first time. Sadly, you only can really develop anything through decades of misery, of horror, and of abuse and sadness. Don't forget the sadness.
Yeah, I mean, and there seems to be, a sadness to you, but are you really that sad? Because I would imagine that you tend to you got to enjoy what you're doing, or is it something that you just need to do? You have no other way to live.
Well, you know, all of the above. And of course, we're always going to be happy when we're performing for an audience that takes the time out of their day to slap their hands together and applaud. But you know, you also deal with waiting in line at Hertz Rent-A-Car for 3.5 hours because they've oversold the cars and this type of thing. And that can really take the wind out of your sails and leave you feeling quite blue, as they say. But we did a film, maybe you've seen the film, maybe you haven't, a few years back called Entertainment, which really,
Yes.
if you want the real picture of what's going on when the spotlight isn't on Neil Hamburger, of course, this could be the best place to turn, and it may give you some of that backstory that you're interested in.
If you were to have to discuss the feelings you have for a certain band, and I want to bring the band up because and this is just kind of talking on what you've already spoken to, which is the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Where did this disdain for them start?
Well, you know, it started the first time I heard the music because it's very bad. And you know, I'm not saying, now I just did a record recently called Seasonal Depression Suite, which was a musical album. It was a suite of songs. And I'm not saying that I'm Luciano Pavarotti. I'm not saying that I am Marie Callas or Frank Sinatra. But I'll tell you one thing. When you have recording tape running, and you have the chance to rewind and get it right, you should take that opportunity. And unfortunately, when you listen to the recordings made by the Red Hot Chili Peppers, these all should have been deleted. This is just bad, bad and sad garbage music. And unfortunately, for some reason, because the bass player, he's got some sort of problem with his fingers, so that he fumbles a lot and makes a lot of odd sounds, then they say that this guy can play. But I think if you ask him to play Happy Birthday on his bass, he can't do it. And the singer certainly couldn't sing Happy Birthday in tune, which I know is hard at a birthday party because you got 25 people singing in different keys. But I still think you got to make the effort. And I don't think Mr. Kiedis has. And I also feel that his book, which I read on a very, very long and awful Greyhound bus ride between St. Louis and Tucson, Arizona, I believe that the book is really a portrait of a very of a I guess what you would call an empty vessel, of a very unpleasant, uncaring, miserable, self-absorbed, monstrous sort of person. Now, there was a time where I was working with Mr. Bungle. You've heard their hits.
Course.
You're very familiar with these guys. And they were very brought down and in a bad mood because the Red Hot Chili Peppers, particularly the vocalist, who shall not be named, but his name is Anthony, he had asked some promoters and things to remove them from bills at rock and roll festivals that these guys had set aside their whole summer to perform at, you see. And that's a vindictive and really an obnoxious thing for this guy to do, but that's what he did. And because of the sway that he has in the industry, because they write songs about, shooting up drugs and vomiting under a pier and these types of things, a lot of money was generated for these shitty asshole record executives that want to do business with these scummy guys. So what happened was that they kicked my friends, Mr. Bungle, off some of these festival bills. And at the time, you know, it was a little sad. It was a sad mood backstage. And so to cheer these guys up, because I was opening the shows, simply to try to cheer them up the way any clown would do with a child who's suffering from a sickness, I started telling those Red Hot Chili Pepper jokes, you see.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they went over very well. And so they became a regular part of the show. Now, do we all still have venom towards the Red Hot Chili Peppers? No, no. Who cares? But, you know, the jokes,
yeah,
they still work. So we still do them and we still write more of them, honestly, as many as possible.
Now, obviously, the last I'd say the last 5 years have been tough on comedy because, there are a lot of people that will look at comedy as something that can be very, you know, almost the expression people use is punching down. And there's a lot of people that like to try to cancel comedians. Has this ever come up in your day-to-day life in the last 5 years where someone's tried to come after you and said, you shouldn't be saying this, or you should censor yourself? And would that even fall on your radar, and would you care?
Well, we feel that the targets that we have are deserving. And if somebody has a problem with it, we feel that they may be mistaken, and also that they do have the freedom of choice to find another act that they might enjoy more. Because the fact is, for every one person that makes a complaint of that nature, there could be 500 people who say, didn't bother me.
Right.
I thought it was funny, or I thought it was true. But the squeaky wheel gets the grease. And so the one person, everyone's going to listen to what they have to say, even though you've got people of all creeds and beliefs and sexes and colors who say, I was fine with those jokes. In fact, I liked them. I
right.
liked the message against low quality that Mr. Hamburger was putting out there. And so, I'll always listen to a complaint, but I haven't found that too many of them have a lot of merit. When somebody's mad at me because I make a joke at the expense of Eric Clapton, I'm sorry, but this is, you know, Mr. Clapton has quite a bit more money, quite a bit more acclaim, and is doing quite well. And I will continue to make those jokes from my grim basement nightclub that I'm making the joke in for 22 people. I think Mr. Clapton can handle it.
So you're heading out on this tour. You're going to be passing through Montreal. It's been a while since you've been in Montreal. I have a very good friend of mine named Ron who was at the last Montreal show. And we were together last Friday, and he was telling me that he was supposed to leave for work the night that you were performing in Montreal, and he canceled his plane ticket to go to that show. That's how much you mean to him. And he's going to the show on the 16th as well in April. Are you cognizant of how many fans you have here in Canada, and especially in Montreal?
You know, I do know that we have a good fan base in several of the cities there. Montreal, I love the city. I mean, I'm always looking for an excuse to get there.
Right.
But over the last few years, when we have been booking Canadian tours and we've reached out, we haven't gotten much interest back. And so that's why it was left off the list. Now, you know, promoters come and go, things change. Maybe there were scheduling conflicts. Who knows what the reason is? But I can say that we're very glad to be getting back. The last time I did a show there, I think it was something to do with Vice magazine or something, some big event with a bunch of asshole bands. And it was, you know, one of those types of things. But then I had to get up the next morning, I think at 3 or 4 in the morning, and fly from Montreal to Nashville And I recorded a record that night live at Third Man Records. And so if you hear any weariness in my voice on that record, it is because I think I went on stage at midnight in Montreal and then headed to the airport at 3 a.m., flew several planes to get to Nashville. There's no direct flight, you know that. And by the time I got to Nashville to do the show, I was out of my cotton picking mind, quite frankly. And that's my memory of the last time I was there, and I can't wait to get back. It's been over 10 years, and that's not right. That's not right.
Well,
And it is not by choice. I've tried. I have tried every time. I say, "Can I please go there?" And they tell me no.
do you have any pre-show rituals that have stayed with you throughout the years that you must do? You know, there's some people that have a certain t-shirt that they wear underneath their suit. Some people like to drink a certain thing. Some people will warm up their vocal cords, stretching. What is a typical Neil Hamburger pre-show?
Well, it's funny you should say that because we do have a few things, you know. One that has really worked for me the last several years, and you'll notice it, is the music of Bow Wow Wow. I really love those songs, and they just put me in the right mood. So, for the 15 minutes prior to going on stage, we try to have the Bow Wow Wow fired up, and that is it's even in the contract. You know what I mean? Gotta have it.
Okay.
Gotta have it to be in the right mood. And I think that is common with certain acts wanting specific pre-show music. And we do that. And then, a lot of times you want to just take a look at the drinks that you're going to drink on stage and make sure there aren't bugs in them. Sometimes there could be fleas or flies, even bees. Cockroach legs have been found embedded in ice cubes and things like that. So, you don't want to get on stage and find a cockroach wing in the ice cube, and then it really could throw off the show. Another thing is, I do have quite a collection of tuxedos and things, as you must to do this kind of an act, you know. But I have a bow tie that I love to use, love to take on the road, and have been using for many years that once belonged to the great singer Frank Sinatra Jr., who it was a personal idol of mine, and I have a couple of his bow ties, and I get those on before the show, and that's again a little bit of good luck before the show starts.
Nice. Well, listen, I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us. The show is going to be great. I think anyone who has never seen your act before live should go, me being one of them. But from someone who's been a fan of your work for a long, long time, I cannot wait to see you live in the flesh. And I hope some people walk out of there offended, and I hope some people walk out of there entertained. And I hope you always continue being the original that you are, because we need more people like you in the comedy world.
Well, thank you, Jason. And of course, the only fear that I have about this show is that you being there, that you're going to have a mob of people surrounding you for autographs, and they're going to miss the whole show. They're going to, as you walk in the door, they're going to say, "There's Jason. I got blah, blah, blah." And then they're going to have that you sign their arms and things, their legs, and then they look over their shoulder and they say, "Oh my God, we missed the whole show."
I'll promise to slip in halfway through, okay?
All right. Well, wear a hat, wear a false mustache, wear a monocle, wear like a Britney Spears concert shirt, things like that, so they don't recognize you.
Thank you so much for chatting today, and best of luck. Be safe out there on the road, and can't wait to see you in Montreal.
Thank you very much for all your kind words and for having me on your show. Bye-bye.
I told you, if you like the Red Hot Chili Peppers, you weren't going to enjoy that. Thank you so much to Neil Hamburger for joining us. Want to let you know, if you want to go see him live in Montreal, April 16th, he's going to be playing at Bar Le Ritz. It's the good folks at Blue Skies Turn Black that are bringing him in. And he will be in Ottawa the next night and then in Toronto on the 18th of April as well. Get your tickets now because they're going to sell out. He's playing Bar Le Ritz. It's a small, intimate venue, and it's going to be a once-in-a-lifetime experience for you to check out Neil Hamburger. You don't want to miss it. You really, really don't. Big thanks to our friends at Heartbeat Hot Sauce, the heartbeat of the Rockman Power Hour. If you use our promo code ROCKMAN20 right there, you'll get 20% off your entire order. I got to tell you, the new hot sauce that they've launched with the Montreal chef Laurent Dagenais, Salsa Verde, has become my favorite. I put it on everything. I've gone through two bottles already and about to crack open the third. And if you want to try it, use the promo code ROCKMAN20 and you get 20% off your entire order. Also, I'd like to thank our friends at Studio House Designs and Audio Technica Canada for helping us sound awesome. We appreciate you. We appreciate all of you. And thanks to my co-host, Ryan Stick. Thanks to our producer, Julia Kajerski. And until next week, we'll see you on the Rockman Power Hour. And don't forget, subscribe, like, share. We appreciate it. Thanks.